Antebellum Innocence by Dear Monday. Read by De Patty. Abandon Fic. Rating Teen. Part of As Simple as Faith series. Summary. The old gods are dying one by one, alone and forgotten. While America's new deities are rising from their shopping mall cathedrals, psalms become pop songs on the radio that spread like wildfire, and poetry is sunk from scripture to laughingstock. Somewhere Ryan Ross's cell phone chimes. The battery is dead. Not that that matters to some people. When his cell phone chimes, Ryan stares blankly at it for a moment before he remembers what he's supposed to do with it. No one texts anymore, much less calls. None of the muses are left. None that he's on speaking terms with, anyway. The battery is dead. Not that that matters to some people. He picks it up, ignoring the blanket of dust that settled over it, gritting his teeth around the stiffness in his fingers and struggling to focus on the pixelated letters on the screen. When he does, it reads, Coffee? B. He rereads it 6 times to make sure he hasn't misunderstood. Incredulously, he types, You're gonna fix everything with coffee? Seriously? I know you were never the smart one, but isn't that kind of a new low, even for you? The ache in the near-visible bones in his hands hovers right over the edge of unbearable, and he deletes 2 fumbled letters for every right one. He looks down at the string of words, small and bitter and arrhythmic, and nothing compared to what he could have done even 20 years ago. He swears under his breath and deletes the whole thing. Instead, he sends back, It's been 17 years. A moment later, the synthetic chiming noise sounds again. The screen says, Exactly. You're not eating, is the first thing Brendan says to Ryan after 17 years of silence when Ryan meets him on the corner. Ryan's on time, of course. He's got nowhere else to be. Brendan's eyebrows are drawn together, and the corners of his mouth tilt downwards disapprovingly. His hands are sunk into his pockets, his cheeks pink with cold, and his hair windswept and tangled, but he's so alive that it's painful to look directly at him. Ryan shrugs. Not being able to eat doesn't bother him like it should. He's never really had more money than he needed, not even back in the day. Wealth has never been a salient characteristic of poets. He just doesn't see the point in eating. You should eat, Brendan insists, wrapping a hand gently around one of Ryan's bird-thin wrists as if nothing has changed since 1969, his warm fingers meeting just over Ryan's slow, unsteady pulse. Come on, fat coffee. I'll buy you lunch. For a split second, Ryan sees himself through Brendan's eyes, thinner than ever, threadbare and so tired. If you want, he says, it makes no difference in the end. How are you? Asks Brendan carefully, as Ryan picks listlessly at a burger oozing grease onto the plate and a pitiful heap of cold fries. Ryan looks at him. Alive, he says flatly, because Brendan knows he's got no patience for stupid questions. Still. Brendan hesitates, glancing reflexively to the side as if he's waiting for someone to be there to drop a sarcastic comment into the yawning silence. But no one does, and Ryan feels a half-hearted twist of guilt as he remembers that he isn't the only one who's lost someone. Brendan says eventually. Good. That's good, right? For who? Ryan retorts without thinking. Good for you, so you don't have to be on your own. Brendan's smile falters, his guard drops, and he looks like he's about to fall into the void of negative space next to him. Ryan realizes this is the first time he's seen Brendan since... Fuck. Since Spencer. Since John. Since John and Ryan, and Brendan and Spencer. Then just Ryan, and then just Brendan again. Ryan does feel guilty now. He'd forgotten how deceptively breakable Brendan is, how easily a miscalculated word can cut him right down to the bone. Maybe, Ryan thinks, he has been on his own too much. He's out of practice at keeping himself under control. Sorry, he says quietly, picking at a stray thread on his sleeve. I didn't mean that. Brendan lights up again from the inside out, like a street lamp flicking on. And sure, it's easy to hurt him without meaning to, but it's never been difficult to fix him either. There's a symmetry to them, Ryan can admit. It's almost not quite funny. I'm used to it, says Brendan easily, and Ryan will never understand how he just forgives so easily. The twitchy rhythm Brendan's drumming against his thigh sounds thin and unfinished without another set of fingers tapping out a counterpart. I know how you get when you haven't left your apartment in a month, he adds with a shrug and a wry half-smile, but he's the guilty one now. Ryan can almost smell it. It's stupid and unnecessary and makes Ryan bite down hard on his tongue in annoyance because, well, Brendan will blame himself for anything he thinks is even remotely his fault and punishes himself accordingly. But this is ridiculous. Brendan's only one person, as is Ryan, and one person is only half as many as you need for the kind of fights with slammed doors and voices screamed hoarse, or even the silent, corrosive kind played out in stealth and spite. It takes two, sure, but somehow this isn't what the people who are still around remember of it. The unfairness still stings a little. Ryan knows logically that Brendan didn't ask for that smile like a major chord, and the way people melt under the force of it, but he got it anyway, and somehow came out a martyr. Logically, Ryan knows this, but it's still bitter in the back of his throat when he thinks about it. How are you? Ryan asks. Not because the answer's going to change anything, but Brendan's eyes are all over him, big and worried like Ryan's a time bomb, and it's making him uneasy. Brendan laughs, sudden and bright and carefree under the diner's slippery yellow lights. Some other time, Ryan might have smirked and called him enchanting just to see him blush, but it's been a long time. There are lines in the dirt now, and he's hyper-aware of them, even in his muddy torpor. I'm good, Brendan says. I'm everywhere. I'm on the radio, I'm on TV, I'm in shops and restaurants, and, he gestures expansively, iPods. People don't even have to carry tapes around anymore. Isn't that amazing? Brendan is one of a kind. Nothing changes, right? Ryan can't help thinking viciously at the echo of their last, the last, screaming match rings briefly in his head. Not a new god, not quite an old one either, just one who changes with the wind and the songs under people's skin, who will keep changing and will be here until the sun goes black as long as there are people singing. Brendan is scrupulously fair. There's no difference to him between a lonely teenager on a shitty guitar and a writer surrounded by a king's ransom of expensive recording equipment. Ryan doesn't get it, in the same way that Brendan doesn't understand how you can have verses without music. Ryan argues back that you shouldn't need a worn-out chord progression if the words are right. Yeah, says Ryan, dragging a soggy fry through the spreading puddle of ketchup and dropping it back onto the plate. He tries to force a smile. It's more difficult than he remembers. Amazing. It's a shame most of them listen to such shit. Brendan mock pouts, warm and achingly almost familiar. That isn't nice, he says. No, Ryan agrees, raising an eyebrow. But it's true. They didn't all have you, a wise one and arbiter of all good taste, Brendan says dryly, only half-joking. Ryan found him 50, 60 years ago, newly reborn while the world was burning with rock and roll, wondering wide-eyed and unsteady on new, shaky legs. Ryan took him in, held on when he was going under, always all too aware of the weight of Brendan's solemn searchlight stare resting on him, feeling the weight of Brendan's faith in him between his shoulder blades every time he moved. Now Ryan's faded and weak with millennia lived in months, weeks, maybe only days left, while Brendan's glowing with strength and life, glossy and golden. Brendan wants so badly to fix things, believes that he can, and his optimism is painful, bright, and aching, sweet, and Ryan feels scared and bitter and sick with it. Brendan's looking at Ryan with this odd expression that Ryan can't quite read, which is unsettling, new and wrong enough to twist his stomach a little. Brendan, he says, warily, I don't know what you're... Brendan looks blank. I don't want your help, Ryan says, pushing his plate away from him, and it's like flicking that switch again, turning the light off. Brennan stands up so quickly his chair slides away, squeaking across the tiles. No one else even looks around, but Ryan can't quite look away. Fuck as if you'd let me. I'm not trying to help you, he bites out, and it's in that moment that Ryan realizes just how badly he's misjudged this. It isn't an intervention. It's a deathbed visit. The epiphany catches in his throat, making it hard to breathe. Brennan sits back down slowly, his hands shaking like they always do when he's fighting all for all just to keep his temper with Ryan. Look, he says, I know it's going to be soon. I was so sick of waiting for the day when I found out from someone else and realized the last thing I said to you was, I hope you don't last another week. I said things. You said things. It doesn't have to be, I don't know, the end of the world or anything. I can get over it. But if you're so... He throws his hands up, frustrated, white flag. So in love with your damn misery, I'll leave right now. I just thought I'd try. You're still my friend, or you were. Or at least you were. Brendan doesn't say it, but Ryan hears it as clearly as if he had, and something in him is bending, breaking. Look, Brendan continues, slower and quieter now, like he's already given up, like Ryan's draining his strength. The music playing quietly over the speaker slows, the beat faltering as Brendan's shoulders slump. I'm sorry if I shouldn't have. He trails off, standing up again, looking anywhere but Ryan. I'll go. I'm sorry I wasted your time. He's halfway to the door when Ryan manages to choke out. Stay. Brennan turns back, his smile blinding bright. He stays.